Good day. It is Thursday, July 25th, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Kyle Kellums. Support for Ozarks at Large comes in part from the University of Arkansas's Women's Giving Circle. The 15th annual KUAF Summer Jazz Series continues with the Composer Showcase featuring the music of Rick Salonen this Saturday in Walton Arts Center's Star Theater. This performance will present the compositions and arrangements of Dr. Rick Salonen, performed by duos, trios, quartets, and quintets from local jazz artists, including the 18-piece Fayetteville Jazz Collective. Tickets and more information available online at KUAF.com or waltonartcenter.org.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, Noble Impact hopes to educate high school students on opportunities in public service. Locally made, handmade home goods at Noble Dwelling. And Springdale acquires the land it needs to expand the Razorback Greenway.
But first, legislation introduced in the U.S. Senate yesterday is expected to ensure Mayflower oil spill victims get tax relief. Arkansas Senator Mark Pryor says the Mayflower Oil Spill Tax Relief Act of 2013 is intended to protect affected residents by making sure compensation from ExxonMobil is not taxed by the federal government. In a conference call with reporters yesterday, Senator Pryor said the legislation has specific goals.
The bill would exempt things like personal and family and living expenses as a result of the spill. It basically just help them on their taxes, and also if they have expenses for repair or rehabilitation for their residence or maybe a replacement, something like that, they would allow some tax treatment there.
Senator Pryor worked on the bill with Senator John Bozeman. Both say the legislation would protect Mayflower families who receive compensation by classifying the contributions under current law as qualified disaster relief payments. Senator Bozeman admits much still needs to be done at the federal and state levels to reimburse the residents.
Everybody agrees that you know, there was so much damage, the oil company pays you that. What we don't want is then for people to have to pay taxes, on that amount that they got. So hopefully we'll get this done. It's very, very important, and it's the right thing to do.
Senator Bozeman says he and Senator Pryor will work with Senate leadership to gain final approval of the measure in a timely manner.
State lawmakers are considering ways to fix troubling trends with Arkansas's parole system. The Joint Judiciary Committee met yesterday and examined why repeat offender rates are near the 70% mark. Some legislators were particularly concerned with a 2007 policy directive authorizing the discharge of those who failed to report to their parole officer if their original discharge date had passed. Critics say the policy allowed parolees to hide out and be set free if they hid long enough. The policy memo was meant to be a temporary 60-day plan to clear a backlog of files. Republican Senator Eddie Joe Williams of Cabot said the conscious choice to continue the policy creates concern over the prevailing atmosphere at state agencies.
But it just looks to me like that somebody consciously, and it concerns me, that we consciously did that for years. Still, I'm more interested in what we're going to do to move forward. But I just want to make sure that that type of atmosphere, that frame of mind, has got to be, is it public, is it safety, number one, for the public? And if it's not, then we're not going to do it. And I think it continues to concern me.
Deputy Director of Parole Dan Roberts said he wasn't aware of the memo, though another senator said a copy was sent to him. But Roberts did say the policy is being changed.
I can assure you that that particular memo and the policy statewide will be changed and has been changed unofficially already, but I will make sure that it's reinforced that it is changed.
The hearing also included testimony from some calling for more technological solutions, and some suggested risk assessments should be changed to treat nonviolent career criminals as violent offenders, a move that would decrease the likelihood of parole. Senator Stephanie Flowers of Pine Bluff argued that providing mental health and job assistance to parolees would decrease the rate of recidivism and do more to benefit the community as a whole.
For the third consecutive year, the University of Arkansas is completing its fiscal year with more than $100 million in private giving support. The university announced yesterday it had recorded $108.4 million in private donations from July 2012 through June 30th of this year. That total was above the university's fundraising goal of $107 million. Mark Power is the university's assistant vice chancellor for development. He says the amount of contributions brought in last year is the fourth highest total ever for the university.
We had two in our capital campaign, and then we had the fundraising 2 years ago that was 120 21.3, which was 2011. So this would rank as our fourth best year. So we're very pleased about that.
Power says that successful years of fundraising, like the one just completed, helped the university move toward its goal of being a top 50 research university.
As we all know, private giving is very important to the overall growth of a university campus, and certainly here at the university, we see that private giving will provide that margin of excellence. And so as we continue on our trajectory and continue to try to do as best as we can for our students and faculty and staff, this is something that will play a major role in that effort to become a top 50 in the years to come.
Of the total amount raised, about $27 million, or roughly one-fourth, was designated to support athletics and the Razorback Foundation. 49% of the funds raised earmarked for students and programs, 37% supported capital improvements, 9% benefited faculty and staff, while 5% went toward other initiatives such as university libraries, the University of Arkansas Women's Giving Circle, the Sustainability Consortium, and the university's diversity efforts.
The Rogers Downtown Historic District may soon get a little bigger. Proposed areas to be added to the district include the half block on the west side of 2nd Street between Walnut and Elm, and the half block on the west side of 1st Street between Poplar and Cherry. Carrie Jensen, director of Main Street Rogers, says that the plan would add areas to the historic district that were added to the National Historic Register last year.
In a survey they did, there was enough historic buildings within those two areas to qualify to be on the National Historic Register. And if you have a qualified building and you're already listed, then you are available for the federal and state tax credits.
According to the Arkansas Historic Preservation Program, owners of buildings that are eligible for inclusion on the National Historic Register can receive as much as a 20% tax credit for rehabilitation of a structure. Even if a building isn't qualified for inclusion on the register, but is in a historic district, rehabilitation projects can garner building owners a 10% tax credit. Jensen says that extending the historic district effectively gives owners of these historic buildings a protection on their investment.
They know that the building next to them, there are some guidelines there to keep it from becoming run down or torn down or some, you know, huge modification that would kind of ruin the look of the block. So you're not going to invest a whole lot of money in your building to bring it back to its historic significance, only to find out that the building next door is going to take away from your property value.
But the Rogers City Council will have to make the final approval on extending the boundaries of the historic district.
Yesterday, we told you about the Arkansas Department of Environmental Quality holding a series of meetings throughout Arkansas regarding an update to the state's 10-year solid waste plan. While one of those meetings will be held tonight at Centerton City Hall, we did incorrectly state that the meeting for Washington-Madison counties would be held in early August. The meeting actual date is scheduled to take place at 6 p.m. August 12th at the Jones Center in Springdale. Additional meetings in the area will be held August 13th at the Harrison City Council Chambers and on August 20th at the Phoenix Professional Building in Fort Smith.
Drought conditions continue to set in across Arkansas, though recent rains may have slowed the progression of the drought. According to the U.S. Drought Monitor, measures drought conditions every Tuesday and releases that data every Thursday. Nearly 11% of the state is under severe drought conditions. 51% of the state is under moderate drought. 91% of the state is at least abnormally dry, and only 9% of the state's northeastern corner is under no drought conditions. Although the majority of the state is dry, only 9 counties still are under burn bans, including Carroll and Madison counties in northwest Arkansas.
The Northwest Arkansas Travelers are now in first place. They won two games last night at Arvest Ballpark in Springdale, defeated the Springfield Cardinals 10-8 in the resumption of a game that had been postponed because of weather the night before, then won the nightcap 8-0. They're now a game ahead of Springfield in the Texas League North. Mostly cloudy, 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms tonight, lows from 65 to 71. Tomorrow, 80% chance of rain, highs in the upper 70s. And for Friday night, 30% chance of showers in northwest Arkansas with lows in the upper 50s. 40% chance of rain tomorrow night in the Arkansas River Valley, lows in the mid-60s.
...145 closed sanitary landfills pock Arkansas's landscape. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich takes us to one long-neglected site southwest of Fayetteville, now consumed by heavy forest, to learn what happens to such places.
C&L Sanitary Landfill, located off Caddo Springs Road, was Fayetteville's municipal garbage dump back in the 1970s. It's been closed for nearly 40 years. Allison Jumper works for this city. She's among a handful of people who've hiked the 33-acre parcel.
Now you would not even notice that there's a landfill here. There's so much vegetation grown over it. Pine trees, it looks like honey locust, all kinds of different trees have come up, oak trees too. So it's pretty well hidden now.
Allison Jumper has a keen interest in the landfill because it's right next to a new planned city park complex. She's park planning superintendent. She says the city now holds the deed on the landfill conveyed back in 2006.
No money was exchanged for it. The city, I think, feels that it is our responsibility to help take care of it.
After the landfill closed and was bulldozed over in 1976, inspectors reportedly found liquid waste oozing from a dozen places into an intermittent creek which drains into a tributary of the White River. They also discovered metal drums filled with unknown waste half buried in the dirt. Those problems were tended to, but some persist.
Trash coming out of the surface. It was called a trench and fill landfill. So there were kind of valleys and hills in it where the trash was put in and then covered up.
C&L Landfill may be hidden from sight by a dense forest, but it's on the Arkansas Department of Environmental Quality's radar. Spokesperson Catherine Beninati.
Surface and groundwater contamination are something that we're keeping a close eye on.
That's because this landfill has not been properly closed. Compared to 40 years ago, the process of cleaning and closing landfills has become much more complex and costly.
Before 95, two things happened when a landfill was closed. Pretty much it was capped and the permit was voided. Since 1995, those two things still happen, but we've increased the monitoring that takes place after a closure. And keep in mind that when you're talking about a closure, this isn't something you plan for when the doors close. This is something that is the exit strategy is written before the landfill even opens. So we have in the original permit monitoring for a specified time post-closure, and that can be anywhere from 2 years to 30 years. That's included in the permit up front.
Landfill owners and operators today must also provide an inventory of waste deposited on site and provide for continuing monitoring and maintenance, known as post-closure care. But some, like this one, have been abandoned. That's why the Arkansas legislature in 1991 created Act 747, the Landfill Post-Closure Trust Fund, so such sites won't be a burden to taxpayers.
It provides the state insurance and a way to ensure that corrective actions are taken in the event that a landfill is abandoned or problems arise in the future. So we have 145 closed landfills in the state, and really the way they look kind of runs the gamut. Most of them remain open space for probably obvious reasons. Many are privately owned. Some are used as parks. Some can become recycling centers and have active uses that are more industrial on site, or they could even be things like shooting ranges. One thing that you never want to put on an old landfill site and is not allowed to be on an old landfill site is a residential neighborhood.
All 145 sites were evaluated and ranked 3 years ago and prioritized for corrective action. C&L ranks at the top of the list, number 3. In 2010, ADEQ announced it would provide $1.5 million of post-closure trust fund money to stabilize the C&L site. Now, 3 years later, the agency's vetting 6 third-party contractors.
Basically, what we're looking for is a third-party construction manager to oversee the corrective action. We want someone to be our eyes and ears on the ground at the site. So once we've selected the consultant, what we'll need to do is go in and negotiate the contract. And What's interesting about CNL is that this is going to be the first time a landfill will be capped using funds from the post-closure trust fund. Money from the fund has been used in a variety of ways, including on site assessments in the past, but this will actually be the first time a landfill is capped using those funds.
Once a project manager is selected, work should begin before the end of this year. Finally, the entire forest will have to be cleared, the land graded. A 2-foot deep dirt cap will be placed on top to seal the landfill. Constructed slopes will serve to sheet away precipitation from the creek. In January of this year, a permanent land use restriction was placed on the property at the request of ADEQ to prevent any construction on top of this site. A 100-foot buffer zone has been placed around the perimeter. Fayetteville Parks Planning Superintendent Allison Jumper pulls out a map to show what's planned for the city dump site.
This is the planned park, and this is the landfill here. The landfill, the plans for the landfill right now do include passive recreation, which might include a disc golf course, picnicking areas, footpaths, things that aren't necessarily sport related, like soccer, where you're, you know, wearing and tearing on the cap of the landfill. So things that are a little bit more passive in nature.
Active sports are planned for the 200-acre parcel next to the landfill. The park concept started up a decade ago when a group of Northwest Arkansas investors sought to construct a mixed-use development called South Pass here. As condition for approval by the City of Fayetteville contingent on the city's 2025 master plan, developers agreed to donate 233 acres for a city park, along with $1 million to help develop it. That was in 2004. Then the real estate bubble burst. South Pass deal defaulted back to Chambers Bank of Danville, which held the note. But in good faith, the bank has honored the original park pledge. Fayetteville now has a deed to the donated South Pass Parcel Park, as well as the old sanitary landfill. And the park has a name, says Fayetteville Mayor Lionel Jordan.
Yeah, now we're no longer referring to that as the South Pass Park. It's going to be more of the City of Fayetteville Regional Park, I think, is the term that's being used right now for that particular project, particular park. So what we know that right now we have enough money toward the park to do 8 soccer fields, and we have enough money to do the streets, and we will probably have enough money to do the water and sewer project and start that project of that amount of construction by probably early 2016.
Baseball fields, trails, playgrounds, volleyball and basketball courts, pavilions, and water features are also planned. The regional park will eventually connect to the city's trail systems. Mayor Jordan says they've banked $4.5 million so far towards the project.
If the people approve, if the voters approve, the $3.5 million, that would give us about $8 million to go toward the regional park. Now, keep in mind that regional park is about a $28 million park. So there's still another $20 million that we have to go for to get through private donations or a bond program or something else later on.
Now, half of the old South Pass parcel lies on the eastern slope of Mount Kessler, of keen interest to local landholders and conservationists who seek to preserve its unique geologic formations as well as ancient oak forests. They hope to purchase 387 acres of the former South Pass property, creating a Mount Kessler Reserve for educational and recreational use, involving both the city and the University of Arkansas in the venture. Mount Kessler advocates plan to present their strategy to City Council this summer. But before any deals are locked down, the old CNL landfill site will have gotten its makeover just in time. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
Emma Avenue in Springdale may not be at the height of its influence, but it is still the traditional heart of downtown Springdale. By the warm months of 2014, Emma could be seeing more activity. The Springdale portion of the 36-mile Razorback Greenway Trail is scheduled to be finished by spring of next year, and the city's downtown will be crossed by that trail.
It's happening. I'll be one of the first ones to say I don't think it happened fast enough.
Patsy Christie is the director of the Planning and Community Development Department in Springdale. She's also a lifelong resident of the city, and she's worked for the city since 1996. She's been involved almost every step of the way with the development of the Springdale part of the trail system. The last links of the city's connection fell into place earlier this month when the Springdale City Council approved acquiring the last parts needed for the trail using eminent domain. Patsy Christie says though the city's acquisition took longer than desired, the trail is now happening.
But I think we needed that additional time for people to understand what an impact that's going to have on Northwest Arkansas and the city of Springdale. You can go see what's going on in Bentonville. You go see what's going on in Fayetteville. You look at the survey information. A lot of those people are from Springdale, and it's just really exciting. It's coming through Springdale.
The route for Springdale has been ready for a while, connecting to Fayetteville on the south side at Powell Street and extending to Springdale's northern border with Lowell after going under Interstate 540. In between those two points, the trail will have tunnels, a boardwalk, run alongside Spring Creek, and follow the southern edge of Lake Springdale. It's a course Patsy Christie has been asked about often, and a route she can recite by heart.
It will cross Don Tyson Parkway, and from there till the south end of the school will be a cycle track. There'll be two lanes for cars to travel in, two lanes for the bicycle traffic to go in, and so it separates it out. To me, it makes it a lot safer. Then it'll switch over.
Part of the trail inside Springdale will take advantage of spots in the city few residents are very familiar with and even fewer visitors even know about.
It's a really neat section because the section from downtown up to Lake Springdale is along Spring Creek, and that's not an area that gets accessed very much. It's very pretty. There is some limestone outcroppings there that we will build a bridge over where you can kind of see where the water goes down underneath and comes back out. It will be some of the most beautiful trail we have in Northwest Arkansas, and I'm not prejudiced at all, you know, so.
Cities in Northwest Arkansas have, to varying degrees and at different times, hypothesized in the past about an elaborate trail system through their city limits. Some, like Bentonville and Fayetteville, have completed their north-south connections for the Razorback Greenway and are already branching out, establishing in-city connectors to the spine of the trail. Patsy Christie says the scheduled spring completion of the Big Trail will open up opportunities for both the region and the city of Springdale.
For Northwest Arkansas, it gives us another tool for people coming to the area. It's just one more thing that you can do while you're here. You can go to Crystal Bridges. You can come to Springdale to a Naturals game. And you don't always have to take a car. You can ride a bike. We're going to make connections to, you can get to Arvis Ballpark going down Don Tyson Parkway from the Greenway. It's not as direct as it will be in the future. But it just opens up a whole new aspect for that. But it also creates a healthy corridor for people who are looking to improve their health. We all need to do that. And it also gives us another alternative for transportation. For Springdale, it goes through downtown Springdale. We'll be the only city on the 540 corridor that it goes through downtown Springdale. And if you go look at what's happened in Bentonville on the north end and what happens in Fayetteville on the south end, we're the heart of that. We'll be the middle of that and have a chance to revitalize downtown Springdale and bring people down here. It's a golden opportunity for us.
She says there are plans and desires for acquiring more grants to help extend the network of trails inside the Springdale city limits in the future. Some of that money could be used to establish trailheads at certain points that would include water fountains and bathrooms. But big picture, other towns in Washington and Benton counties could eventually be part of the Razorback Greenway Trail system.
And then we can make connections to go east and west. Right. Eventually we could get to the airport, get to, Decatur and Gentry and Siloam Springs, where you can get across Northwest Arkansas. I'm like you, if somebody told me 10 years ago we would have got that kind of money to build something that wasn't a road or a sewer plant, I would have told them they were crazy. Because that just didn't happen. And it is a reality, and it is something that Northwest Arkansas should be very proud of.
There is work to be done to meet the spring deadline. But Patsy says much of the new work to be done in Springdale is some of the least complicated construction. She admits 10 or 12 years ago, it was difficult to imagine the Razorback Greenway could come together. But she says now she can sense the anticipation.
This is the first time that there has been so much excitement and so much support for doing something downtown. People really see that it's going to happen.
And there is just one bit of caution. The work doesn't take place overnight. There will be some temporary adjustment required.
Be patient. There's going to be barrels. There's going to be work going on. It will get better. That's just what people have to remember now. We're finally going to get to that stage.
Patsy Christie is the director of the Planning and Community Development Department in Springdale. I talked to her in her office at Springdale City Hall earlier this week.
I'm Robin Young. Next time on Here and Now, a father reflects on what it's like for his sons to watch Fruitvale Station, the new film that tells the story of Oscar Grant, their friend who was shot to death by a transit cop right in front of their eyes.
A lot of people are getting educated about what happened, but to these young men, it's like a nightmare all over again.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
Here and Now begins this afternoon at 1 here on KUAF 91.3 FM.
Noble Impact, an organization that engages people to pursue public service through entrepreneurship, launched last Friday. The new venture, partnering with the Clinton School and the Walton College of Business, held its first community engagement competition this weekend in Little Rock. Maggie Carroll from our content partner KUAR in Little Rock was there, and she has this report.
37 students from seven high schools around the state came together to participate in a two-week institute. Steve Clark, CEO of Northwest Arkansas-based company Rockfish, developed Noble along with Clinton School alumni. The Noble Institute program for high school-age students is one of three in the newly formed organization, alongside a speaker series and a curriculum handbook. Co-founder Chad Williamson introduced the program.
Faces of parents, faces of community partners, thank you all to the judges for coming out, making time in your day to do this, to check out what we believe is the future.
The students, or scholars as they are referred to in the program, were split up into nine groups and assigned a community partner. Our House, the Oxford American, and Arkansas Commitment were among them. The students had to develop potential solutions to issues at various organizations. At the end of the 2 weeks, they pitched their ideas to five judges, families, and community members.
Thank you guys for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Good job, guys.
The judges deliberated, and a winner was chosen based on the skills and ideas the teens learned over the two-week institute. Jordan Young was a student on the winning team.
If you would ask me like a month ago, like, what could you do to change the world, I wouldn't be able to answer that at all. But now I've learned that anybody can make a difference, no matter what age, what size, what color, what anything.
Parents' reactions were positive, saying the program is unique in encouraging group learning and team building throughout the 2 weeks. Renisha Ward, student Anthony Ward's mother, says the institute provided her son with valuable tools and skills.
He's always been a dreamer, but I think this program helped him come out of his comfort zone a lot. For him to stand on the stage and to do public speaking was so... my heart was full.
Founder Steve Clark says the program is special.
Because when we set this pilot in motion, it's hard to know where you're going to go with this. You know, seldom ever is public service mentioned in the same breath as entrepreneurialism. And then one of the reasons we wanted to go this route is two guiding principles. Healthy things grow and healthy things are sustainable. And that's just not for business. That's just not for deposits. That's for programs that affect change.
Noble Impact started in Arkansas but plans to grow nationwide. It is a national educational initiative with a goal of putting public service and entrepreneurship in every school. In Little Rock, I'm Maggie Carroll.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
It's Thursday, and we've started a new monthly series on Thursdays.
Last week, we started a new series, which is What's in a Name?
Mm-hmm.
The stories behind things that are named in our region. We start another one that will be on Thursdays.
Things that are locally made in our region.
So, boy, it could be anything from chocolate to a canoe. Well,
anything. I mean, Highland Dairy, because milk is,
right.
You know, is made here. But
exactly.
Yeah, anything from the small to the big, really.
And to start this ongoing series, Antoinette Grajeda met with some people in Springdale in a business called Noble Dwelling. And they make all sorts of things here locally.
Artsy, craftsy things.
That's right.
Yeah. Here's her report.
You ready?
No. No. I'll do it for you. That's fun, huh? Yeah, wind chime. Can you say wind chime? You should try.
On this warm July evening, Adam Cole raises up his 16-month-old daughter, Nora, to play with a wind chime hanging in his workshop, which is located in the middle of Springdale. The copper wind chime was created by his shopmate, Steve Gerecht, a fellow woodworker who has known Adam for about 15 years. As a fan hums on the floor and creates a small breeze through the shop, Adam's wife, Kara, stands nearby. Kara and Adam were both born and raised in Springdale and are celebrating their 11th wedding anniversary this year. The two were high school sweethearts who have recently transitioned to business partners as the owners of Noble Dwelling.
Well, high school sweethearts to marriage was not a hard decision. I think we were one of the more rare love at first sight stories. I mean, we knew right away, and parents thought we were crazy. I mean, you're 15, you don't know what you're doing. But I think for us, the business part just started us making gifts for friends and family and making things for our own home. And as more people saw what we were doing and saw our style and started asking us to make things and they would buy them, just kind of grew from there. And I think still every day we're a little bit shocked that people want to buy our stuff. It's like we make things because we like them and people continue to buy them. So here we are.
The Coles initially just worked out of their home, but outgrew that very quickly. To keep up with the demand for their goods, they moved into their current space about 4 months ago. In addition to custom orders, the couple creates handmade items that are available for purchase at Warehouse 54 Indy Market in Springdale and Four Legged Bird in Fayetteville. The Springdale natives create handmade home goods that include anything from purses, satchels, and aprons sewn by Kara, to furniture, wooden six-pack carriers, and metal marquee-style letters and arrows created by Adam. Kara says it's difficult to explain their crafts. She says it's just them.
I know Keith at Four Legged Bird. He loves to describe us as the soft and hard. I'm the softer side with the sewing and the bags and the more feminine products, and Adam is the hard side with the welding and the wood and metalworks. I guess that would be a good description for us. I think we love anything old and anything repurposed. So a lot of our things are a very old-time feel, a very classic feel. Very vintage, to use a coined word anymore.
Kara says the hard part about explaining their work is they are often all over the place. While they do have their staple items, Kara says they get bored pretty easily and they love a challenge. Many of their custom orders include people finding something they like a table online, and then asking the Coles to make it. Kara says they enjoy the challenge of making something similar, but adding their own flair to it. Although Kara sews, she says she can't read patterns, so oftentimes when she sees something on the internet she wants to make, she simply sketches it up and tries to create it. Kara says she often doesn't know what she's going to make from day to day.
I actually learned to sew probably about 6 years ago. I actually had cancer, and so I was, you know, in the home a lot and couldn't go anywhere, move around a lot. And so while I was doing chemo, my best friend Janessa said, hey, let's learn how to sew. This would be a fun thing to do. And so we didn't have anyone teach us or knew what we were doing. We just bought a sewing machine and said, let's try to make this. And so we did.
Another tough time in the couple's life has also been incorporated into their current business.
Our first son, his name was Noble Ray, and he actually passed away from SIDS. And so after that, we came back, and we actually moved to Haiti after that and did some restoration work there after the earthquake. And when we came home from that and had the opportunity to have a little bit more time to process life and think things through, and that's when a lot of our creativity started coming out. We started making a lot more things, and so we decided we needed a name for what we were doing. And we've always called our home our dwelling. It's just a word that we've always used. We like to dwell in places, and so we just knew we wanted to use Noble's name as, you know, part of a legacy for him. And so Noble Dwelling came about, and here we are.
Adam and Kara made their debut last December at the Little Craft Show after some encouragement from their friend Amber Paradin of Paradin Supply Company.
We were so nervous and we didn't think anyone would buy our stuff. Why would we do this? Why would we put all our stuff in a craft show? And we actually ended up selling out of 90% of our stuff in the first 20 minutes of the craft show. And so we were just totally blown away. And that was what really kind of spurred us on, like, okay, maybe this is soon. Maybe we should really look into selling our stuff full time.
While they do have some signature items, Adam says he wants to expand what they create.
We're starting to get into a little bit bigger stuff, like the arrows and the marquee stuff, and then furniture is our next big push. We do a lot of smaller hand goods. At the Little Craft Show last year, we were there. We had a lot of smaller, more present type things, and then at Block Street Party, we brought some of the marquee letters, and those were huge. So we've kind of just tried to expand where we don't get in a rut so we can stay creative with it, where it doesn't quite feel like a job.
If you've been to Maxine's Tap Room in Fayetteville since it reopened earlier this year, you may have noticed a large illuminated metal M hanging on the wall. This was created by Adam, who says he made it bigger than his typical letters because he wanted to pay tribute to the Maxine's tradition. Adam grew up with a father who liked to carve and tinker with wood, which is how Adam got into woodworking himself. Adam built houses with a Springdale company for years and is currently a shop foreman for Eclipse Displays in Fayetteville. He says Noble Dwelling is a creative outlet for him. Recently, his creativity led him to get into metalworking. Adam says they often scavenge for materials and rarely use new materials unless a client requests it. Adam says he likes that old Las Vegas look of metal letters with light bulbs. In addition to letters, he also has similarly styled arrows and a star hanging in his shop. Although he is new to metalworking, Adam says he finds it's more forgiving than wood because it's easier to fix your mistakes. The couple seems to be enjoying their success, but Adam says it can be overwhelming at times when they receive so many orders at once. Kara says she still doesn't expect the reaction she sometimes receives.
It's still a surprise every day that people are seeking out our stuff. I think that's what surprises me more is when someone says, I saw, you know, someone carrying your bag and I wanted to know if I could have one too. It surprises me every day because I make, kind of like Adam was saying, we make things that we like and sometimes it still kind of surprises us that people want the things that we make and like our style and what we're doing.
Noble Dwelling will have a trunk show at Four-Legged Bird in Fayetteville September 13th. You can find out more about this local company by visiting facebook.com/noble dwelling. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
The A.G. Russell Knife Event begins tomorrow at the John Q. Hammond Center in Rogers. But when it started 5 years ago, it was just a birthday party.
A.G. turned 75.
That's Goldie Russell.
And so we decided to have a knife event in celebration of his birthday. And I think he had been in the knife business at that time, like 45 years.
She says they had no intention of doing any more. But AG's longtime involvement with knife shows and organizations such as the Knife Makers Guild, which he was the inspiration behind, had people begging for more.
We put on a show that rivals any other show anywhere in the world. We do a lot more to make things easy for the exhibitors. We take care of them. We, for the manufacturers, we bring in their product, and because manufacturers won't sell retail for the most part. A few of them will, but most of them won't. And so we sell for them. We just do all of these extra things.
She also credits the great facility in Rogers. She says people come simply because they like knives. People buy them to use as tools, but most often people buy them because they love them. She likens it to women buying shoes.
And here they can come and they can look at knives from 60, 75 different handmade knife makers. They can talk to those makers. They can learn.
One of those knife makers is Stefan Palmer. He works in his mentor's shop on Beaver Lake near Lowell. He started making knives about 3.5 years ago when he needed to turn his drinking and hanging out time into something constructive.
You know, it's very addicting. You know, I started on one knife, and one knife grew into, you know, any chance I get, I come, you know, start coming down the shop and start, you know, making it. You know, fortunately for me, Steve has just got a great talent for having patience. And as he says, you know, I don't have to keep buying the lessons he's already paid for. And that goes from, somehow I end up doing it, even though I shouldn't, but from smashed hands to ground finger bits, you know, each knife takes a little bit of you with it. Blood, sweat, and tears, I kind of guess that's the way to put it.
Not really an artsy person by nature, he says this is an outlet for creativity. His mentor is Steve Nolte, owner of Alert Alarm Systems in Lowell. He picked up knife making when he retired about 7 years ago, and now sells 200 each year all over the United States. One of his knives is in this year's World's Best Knives publication. His shop looks like your typical workshop. Work tables with tools, bits of metal about, and of course, knives in various stages of completion. Power tools line two walls, with two in the middle of the room, a drill and a saw. The art of knife making begins with a metal, a block about 2 feet long and 4 inches wide, about a quarter inch thick, though that varies. It is sometimes stainless steel, but for these custom tools, it is often Damascus, a sheet of different metals that have been layered one on top of the other. We're talking like 300 to 400 layers of metal, making up that quarter inch. The result is a blade that is silver, but with darker gray designs when treated. Steve explains.
All right, now, there are four different steels in this blade. There's structural, high carbon, springs, and ball bearings. Okay, so each one of those metals has a different makeup. So each one of them is harder than the other or softer than the other. But that all looks as to be one and the same, right? Okay, now if I pour acid on it, then each one of the metals is going to be eroded at a different rate.
Using a wire hanger hooked into a hole drilled into one end, he dips the blade into an acid vinegar mixture, rinses it off, and the result is an ornamental wavy pattern. The metal is soft when they start, but once finished, it can chip an anvil without making a single mark on the knife. Once the type of metal is chosen and the shape has been cut out, the heating and the grinding begins. Here's Stefan on that process.
You went ahead, heated it with a torch, and that's what we're talking about, and that's your heat treat process, which makes it really, really hard, all right? And then you put it back in a stove, like a kiln kind of, and you heat it up at like, you know, a few hundred degrees and bring it down, heat it up. And what that does is brings it back down to where it's a little bit softer and not as brittle. And that process is that way, if somebody drops their knife, it's not going to shatter, but you still want it hard. So once you get from here, you'll say center line the knife to where you know where the center of it is, and then you start the grinding process.
Steve, wearing what appear to be signature overalls and a t-shirt, is grinding in the background. He stands in front of a standing belt grinder, which uses belts of various grit, like sandpaper, to sloth away layers of metal, making a perfect profile on the blade. If you look straight on at different types of knives, whether hunting, kitchen, or pocket, you'll see that the grade of the slope leading from top to bottom of the blade varies along with the thickness of each type. It's a tedious process, and with one bump of an arm, a nice line could be ruined. The grind takes off the shiny surface of the metal, making it dull and needing a polish.
You can go from having something that looks like this to having a mirror finish.
He moves along a row of electric polishers. They resemble at-home shoe polishing contraptions, like one you would put your toe under. The machines have circles of fuzzy material of various softness.
Pretty amazing, but again,
the result is a shiny mirror-like finish. Next up is the really creative part, the handle. Using hand-dyed camel bone, a resin-filled pine cone, wood from the War Eagle mill wheel, or stones and brass, Stefan makes beautiful and colorful handles to complement the perfectly shaped and shined blades.
I'll take the leftover pieces that, you know, are smaller, and it's a lot more work actually for me to take the junk and make it into something. But when they turn out good, you know, it's nice to know that that's stuff we might have thrown away, you know.
crafty, and sustainable. Stefan takes pride in making something that is good enough to be on display.
But at the same time, my feelings almost get hurt that it's going to be in a display case and not be used. You know, I don't make a knife razor sharp and spend all that time, like with the metal, going to a certain Rockwell to where, you know, I couldn't, you know, make it a picture of a knife, you know. I mean, I make a knife so that you can use it, you know. So that's a little bit of the frustrating part of it is that as I've gotten better, you know, it turns into artwork, you know.
Funny, this knife maker says he hardly uses knives, doesn't even carry one of his own handmade pocket knives, but he loves making them for others. That's one of his favorite parts, taking something special somebody wants and making it his own. He's also fond of the camaraderie that goes along with knife making.
You know, I mean, I'd love to say this is all about making knives, but like I said, I was used to drink all the time, go out, and, you know, so I don't know where it's all going to take me. I mean, the camaraderie that goes along with this, and which you'll see coming out here when you go to the A.G. Russell show and see the business end of setting up and talking and, you know, selling the knives to and meeting people, you know.
And they love getting feedback. Steve Nolte, Stefan's mentor, read me a text message from a man who owns one of his knives, a trainer with the Navy SEALs in Coronado, California. He said how much he loves his knife and showing it off to the SEALs. Both Steve and Stefan will be at the A.G. Russell Knife event this weekend at the John Q. Hammond Center in Rogers. It begins tomorrow and runs through Sunday. For tickets or for more information, visit knifeevent.com. This is Ozarks at Large.
Tired of the everyday routine?
Yeah.
Want to get away from it all?
Yeah.
We offer you escape.
I'm Jad Abumrad. On the next Radio Lab, we escape from jail.
He's an escape artist and folk hero.
From our past.
I don't think there's any way Chris changes.
And from the solar system.
Our first baby steps into interstellar space.
Radio Lab, Saturday at noon on KUAF 91.3 FM.
WordCamp is a grassroots event that brings together web developers, designers, bloggers, and people interested in the blogging tool WordPress. The weekend-long event begins tomorrow with a meet and greet at the Iceberg in Fayetteville. Ozarks at Large's Emily Gallahan has more.
Blogs all over Northwest Arkansas are getting a makeover this weekend, thanks to WordCamp, a conference here in Fayetteville for bloggers and web designers. The conference brings the bloggers of the area together to teach them how to use WordPress. If you don't know what that is, WordPress.org describes it as a semantic personal publishing platform with a focus on aesthetics, web standards, and usability. Basically, it's just a software for creating blogs and websites. Angela Belford, SEO and marketing consultant for the Belford Group and conference chair for WordCamp, says this weekend's conference is for bloggers of any skill level.
So it's great because we have in one room, you know, at lunchtime, we will have everything from I don't know what WordPress is to I can make WordPress do somersaults for you and everything in between.
They have four different tracks of speakers and presentations, starting with a 101 track for beginners. The most advanced is their developer track for people who are already hardcore WordPress users. WordPress isn't just for the tech savvy. Digital coordinator for Northwest Arkansas Media, Sarah White, says it isn't complicated.
It's super easy to use. There's no coding or anything like that involved. You can access it from anywhere. You can put all of your social media widgets and then those types of things. They integrate very easily. It's just a very inexpensive, affordable way for people to have a web presence.
And it's good for business. According to WordPress.com, over 360 million people view pages online every month. White says businesses should use that to their benefit.
If you don't have a website, or a website that's a quality website where users can come and find more information about your business, they can figure out what you're about, then you're really not harnessing the internet's full capability.
That goes for blogs, too. Even though they're not as professional as websites, they can be just as helpful in expanding businesses. Conference Chair Angela Belford explains.
And what your blog can do is it gives you an opportunity to kind of share more of who you are. You can share your story. In a traditional website, you know, you have home, about, contact services, but you don't really get to share your story. You don't get to talk about the people that are in your staff and why they're fantastic or the great customers that you serve.
Saturday's conference will not only provide a better understanding of WordPress, but a chance to meet other web designers and bloggers in the area.
For people that attend WordCamp, it also is a great opportunity to learn from some of the best in our region. We end up with some great networking.
WordCamp is all day this Saturday, starting at 9 a.m. at the Donald W. Reynolds Center for Enterprise Development on the University of Arkansas campus. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Emily Gallahan.
It is Thursday, July 25th, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
With us, Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Little music for tonight. And anytime I talk to you about music, I'm reading the words of Kevin Kinder, music writer for What's Up, because all I really speak is Beth Patterson from New Orleans and Trout Fishing in America.
All right.
Kevin says there's a band called the Dirty River Boys from El Paso who will be on stage Thursday night, that would be today, at George's Majestic Lounge. The band plays what's been described as a stripped-down, yet extremely rowdy mix of country, folk, and Americana music with a scrappy rock and roll spirit.
Sounds like my kind of band.
Admission to the 9 p.m. show is $10. And while you're planning ahead, if you, like my best friend, have an obsession for a guy called Adam Ant,
then you're the other person.
Then I'm the other person, and
I
will be at Kane's Ballroom next week to see Adam Ant. If I live, I'll report back to you on this experience. Google Kane's Ballroom if you, too, love Adam Ant.
Okay.
Becca Martin Brown is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
This Saturday is Festival Day at the 38th Annual Arkansas Interfaith Conference Choir Camp at Subiaco Abbey in Logan County. Musical presentations begin at 9:40 a.m. in the Abbey Church. After a bring-your-own picnic on the grounds, a Broadway-style show in the Performing Arts Center will begin at 12:30. More information available at choircamp.org.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Support for KUAF comes from the University of Arkansas Bookstore, reminding everyone that August 3rd and 4th is Arkansas's tax-free weekend. The University of Arkansas Bookstore offers a selection of school supplies, textbooks, apparel, and more. Razorback apparel is also available at the Northwest Arkansas Mall and Pinnacle Hills Promenade in Rogers. uofastore.com for more information.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Kingston.
Kingston on the way to the Buffalo River. I always drive through Kingston on the way to the Buffalo River.
If you live in Kingston, it's on the way to home.
You're, well, true.
Right?
Yeah.
Or if you live in, say, Boxley Valley, Kingston could be on the way to Fayetteville.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Yeah.
I love the little Kingston Square
it's
there.
It's very cute driving around. Yes.
Yes, it is. I've often thought that if you wanted to have an extreme marathon, start at Kingston and run to Boxley Valley. Because there are some grades there that...
That does not sound appealing to me at all.
Nor me. I just thought if you wanted
if
to have
wanted
it,
to,
yes,
if you,
you
wanted
could do
to.
It.
It sounds
It'd
appealing
pretty.
To some people.
You know, do it in the fall. It'd be very pretty.
It would be pretty.
Eureka Springs Fun After Five event is tomorrow. The theme is outdoor adventure.
There you go.
Hiking, kayaking, biking, exploring the outdoors in Eureka Springs. There will be booths, a guided trail hike, a giant Jenga game.
Yes.
Which sounds fun.
Yes.
Also a free concert with Shannon Wurst in Basin Park.
That's a deal.
All happens after 5 o'clock.
Have you ever played the giant Jenga game at the Barcade on West and Dixon?
No. Jenga, what are they made out of? It looks like it would hurt if it
They're
fell
blocks.
Over.
They're blocks. Well, you kind of have to get out of the way. You don't yeah. want a block to fall on your toe.
But, right. So, but, no, I haven't.
But it's not as big as the one that I saw a picture yeah. of for this tomorrow night event in Eureka yeah. Springs. But
sounds like a lot of fun.
It is fun.
Yes.
Yeah.
Also, I want to clear something up. Yesterday when I was talking to Tim Clark, the president of the Heartbeat of the Ozarks Classic Car Club, I want to give the proper web address. It is heartbeatoftheozarks.org, O-R-G, heartbeatoftheozarks.org.
There you go.
All right.
Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks so much for listening. Antoinette will join me tomorrow for a brand new edition of Daily Ozarks at Large. We're together Sunday morning at 9 for Weekend Ozarks
we
at
are.
Large.
We are.